How many different Star Trek series have there been? Let's see if we can rattle them off. Star Trek.
Star Trek Next Generation.
Deep Space Nine.
Star Trek Enterprise.
Voyager.
Let's see. Well, I've named all the ones I can think of, but guess what? Fans make Star Trek fan productions all the time. Some of them are kind of primitive. And I guess that, if I understand it correctly, Paramount Studios allows it as long as it's operated by volunteers only. So I shouldn't be too surprised that here, where Captain Kirk's chair actually resides, there would be lots of Star Trek fans in the Pacific Northwest. And guess what? Bubbling under, they're working on Star Trek Phoenix. It's a local Seattle-based fan production. And as with all Star Trek fan productions, they make no money. They embrace it as a labor of love. Now, in case you think it's a really hack job, listen to this. There are 34 actors, not counting me and Mike Jones. There are 40 staff members that are locally based in Seattle. On the phone with us is Leo Roberts in Seattle. Leo, what is your official? You're the senior executive producer?
That's correct.
Now, in Hollywood, being the senior executive anything means that you just put up some money. But here, is that what that means?
Partially.
You're the check writer.
I'm the check writer, and I'm also the yes man.
Yes man meaning yes, Paramount. Yes, Paramount. Yes, Paramount?
Hopefully.
All right.
that's the goal.
Now, Star Trek Phoenix, at first we thought might be, a place where Kirk and Bones retire, in Scottsdale somewhere. But what is Star Trek Phoenix going to be about? Is it going to be one huge episode or potentially a whole series?
It will be potentially an entire series.
What's it about?
It is set 52 years after the last movie, Nemesis, and it contains a brand new ship, a brand new crew, all new technology, just a brand new look, if you will.
So when did Nemesis end? You got to help me out here. I'm not as up on this as Mike Jones is. Is it between series, or where does it take place in the time-space continuum?
In the time-space continuum, it actually took place in the year 2379. And it came out in 2002, where our series takes place year 2421.
So that's after Picard, right?
That is correct.
All right, after Picard, but before some of the later series.
Well, actually, no, it's actually further into the future than any series.
So all the other series were Picard prequels. Or earlier. Voyager was earlier,
yeah,
right?
Yes,
prequel
sir.
Was before even Kirk. Okay, I got it.
Are you taking advantage of this Boeing machine strike to get that brand new ship built while these guys got some free time on their hands?
Oh, absolutely. It's a secret, though. Don't tell anybody.
All right, let me ask you a bottom line question.
Sure.
Are you nuts?
A little bit. I think you have to be to do this.
Next bottom line question.
Okay.
Are you building a ship?
We are.
Where?
Well, in the 3D world.
Computer.
but you have to have some hallways and stuff, because actually I've been on two Star Trek episodes and they don't really have a ship, but they had to build a real bridge and they had to build real hallways. Are you going to 3D those, or do you have to build some of them?
You know, most fan productions, if not all of them, do CG, so they do it in front of a green screen. We made a decision about a month ago to forego that and actually build full sets. So it has not been completely announced to the public until now.
Uh-oh.
And so, oops, I let the cat out of the bag. But we are going to build full sets for the show.
If I understand this correctly, this is going to be a calling card for the Seattle film industry, which has been bypassed of late because of the exchange rate with Vancouver, British Columbia, but this is a chance to show Hollywood that guess what we can do here in Seattle just because we care, right?
Absolutely.
And now the next bottom line crazy question. Paramount retired Star Trek. There's currently no series out there. I don't know if they thought the demos were getting up there, or maybe that it was $1 million an episode was too expensive, or maybe they just ran out of ideas and Roddenberry's relative said, please, give it a break. I don't know what happened. Maybe you do. What's the chance that if you make an amazing pilot that Star Trek Phoenix, like the proverbial Phoenix, could help the franchise rise from the ashes?
You know, the new movie is going to, it's coming out next year, will bring in a new generation of Trekkies, I believe, you know, based on what I've seen. But Star Trek's always been about the future. It's never been about really anything else. So it's about time, I think, that a new series hits the air. And with this being so far into the future, we're following a successful formula, just like Next Generation did, where it,
right. So it's possible, yeah. and you hope it happens.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's what all of these. I mean, these are 50 staff members, 34 actors, 8 main, 26 supporting. All these people are putting their talents into this, actually, in a sort of a, almost like a reality show kind of way, hoping that it becomes a series.
Oh, they all hope it. They all ask when and if, and it's just a matter of time.
Leo, how rich will you get? Do I have to sign something that says Leo Roberts gets everything?
I am here to help the studio do whatever it takes to get a new series on television.
And how poor is this effort making you if you're the main check writer? And
are you like the guy who bought the Kalakala?
You know, I have a few other people that are financially supporting this that are part of the production, but it is starting to get to that point of where it's becoming so huge that, you know, we have to consider the possibility of investors or something to continue it. It really
is. Do any of them own a company that rhymes with Mulkin?
You know, it is actually a thought. We are actually thinking about, you know, talking to Mr. Paul Allen to see if there's any interest there. So we are actively working on that.
You should borrow Kirk's chair, because this is in the future, and they should find the smashed up Enterprise with a beat up chair in it or something. Then you should get that chair.
That would be fantastic.
That'd be a great scene.
He prefers Commander Allen, by the way, if he ever gets his.
When you call, ask for Commander Allen.
Commander Allen, absolutely.
Yeah, really. Hey, Leo, if you do such a good job on this, it sounds like your heart's really in it. If you do such a good job that they ask you to, one thing I know about pilots is they say, well, show me five more episodes. Have you put storylines together for future episodes? Should they ask you for another couple episodes to look at to make their decision?
We've actually had episodes all for season one and starting halfway through season two, so we're definitely prepared.
You know what works? I've seen it on that CSI and that Law & Order show, is they ripped from today's headlines kind of storylines. Have you done that? Have you got the episode where the captain is mad because he's not invited to the gay helmsman's wedding and there's a feud to brews? Have you got that one in?
Well, you know, it's definitely for the future.
Yeah, this is for the future. That's
so you're
past.
Saying there's no gay helmsman?
No. By then, everybody's happy. But here's the deal. Let's talk about that, because, you know, today's headlines will solve all those problems in the future. That's what was so cool about Star Trek, is we solved all kinds of problems.
Right.
If you're going to develop that world, and I don't know if you want our input or not, but as a fan production, if you want to hang up, it's okay. I think you should look at the problems that existed in that era, psychoanalyze, you know, Picard and all those people, and help and imagine where society would evolve to from there. I bet you have done that a little, haven't you?
We have.
What, for example, there's not enough nudity in their era. They need more nudity.
Are any of your volunteers doing that?
You know, I have not approached them yet, but you never know.
You never know. I mean, remember they tried with they tried to save Enterprise, the prequel, mm-hmm. by having that Jolene Blaylock, get all rowdy and randy. But then by the time they get into the future, nobody's doing anybody, nobody's having any fun.
The exchange of bodily fluids was outlawed years ago.
So I don't know how you deal with that issue. What are the other issues they had back then? Everybody wore the same uniform. I imagine the kids of the Starfleet people are like,
Pump
rebelling.
Riders, safety pins all over the uniform.
Yeah, they're rebelling, and they make fun of the leotards that all their parents wear. This is not going.
Can you get a Star Trek uniform to hang below your ass or out your underwear?
So, Leo, what can you tell us about this episode?
Well, you mean the pilot?
The pilot, yes.
It's something that's different, because in most Star Trek episodes or series, rather, they always just go with this grandiose approach, this grandiose entrance for all the characters in the ship. We've taken it a little bit different this time, only that we jump right into the story and run with it, and it's running about 72 minutes right now, we believe, and it's just going to be nothing but story and action, and it's a real return back to what Roddenberry...
And Roddenberry's vision was that Star Trek was basically a Western, only in the frontier instead of the Wild West was space.
Right.
Cool. Who's your captain?
His name is Captain Bryce Avary.
And what's he look like in real life? Is he and is he full of himself? You know, offset too, because that's important.
You know, he is not. He's actually very humble. Ben Andrews is the actor portraying the captain, and he's actually a very funny guy and a very experienced actor. So.
But to get the right chemistry, doesn't he have to piss off the whole rest of the cast and have them all resent him?
Oh, that's it, William Shatner, yes, of course.
Isn't he a sexist pig? I wish I had three hands.
This is Seattle, though, so they're very nice people.
That's a good point.
Okay, Leo, are you actually in? And, you know, Mike and I will volunteer to be extras, and we'll do whatever you want us to do when you're actually filming. Although Mike, I think, wants to be in some sort of costume, right?
Well, I was just going to say, no, Bob will be an extra and then force me to watch.
That'll be great.
That'll work.
I will put you both in a Starfleet uniform.
That's it? That's all we get?
Oh, tell me what else you'd like.
I don't know. It's all right. And Leo, have you ever, do you have any experience at all with females of our species?
Very little.
Very little.
Attaboy.
Okay. That could go in a number of different directions, but, you know, that's meant to be the geek question.
A little bit of mystery there.
Yeah. Leo Roberts, the senior executive producer, Star Trek Phoenix. Leo Roberts, Star Trek Phoenix. Had stories make the news of campaign signs disappearing, yard signs being stolen, presumably by somebody who doesn't like your candidate.
Right.
Nationally, there have been a few more stories. This election gets a little nasty as we get down to the final home stretch. In Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Sean Terschak put up some signs, and they kept disappearing. McCain Palin signs. Well, it turns out they were being lifted by someone, and now he wanted to protect his signs, so he wired them up with electricity. He ran the wires from his house, hooked the signs to a power source for in its pet fence electricity. Okay. It's not, you know, not designed to kill.
No. I know that voltage well.
Do you? Have you ever touched a pet fence?
I climbed a couple electric fences in my day.
Well, here's what ends up happening. Someone does grab the sign.
Yeah.
Get a zap.
Mm-hmm. That's not quite that bad.
But you might not have expected this. It was a 9-year-old boy.
Ooh.
So now the 9-year-old boy's dad is all ticked off. Sean, I think, protecting his property. I mean, if you have an electric fence or if you have something, if someone trespasses, does it matter if they, and assuming they're not in danger of anything other than a good jolt.
And any zap they incurred was of their own doing. No, don't steal this man's sign.
So you're on his side. How about you, Joe?
I've got to hear more. I do think he had some kind of written warning saying, you know, this is electrified. Wow. No, I'm not sure about
and
that.
And depending on how good the public schools are, the kid may or may not have been able to read it.
Now, the kid did have an Obama sign in his hand. He was getting ready to do the swaparoo on Sean here. So.
On the phone with us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Sean Terschak. Sean, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
All right. Does the newspaper story have this pretty accurately? You had a sign out there. It was getting stolen. You wanted to wire it up with a pet fence, and boom, you caught a 9-year-old kid, and his dad's all ticked off.
That's correct.
Okay.
I had put up a total of 6 signs previous to tact. Each of them walked away within hours of being put in the ground.
And you... You put this electric fence up for the purposes of punishing, stopping, protecting your property.
So obviously, I'm not out to harm anyone.
Right. And it's a pet fence.
Exactly. You can buy it at Home Depot or Lowe's. It's completely harmless, completely safe.
Did you have a warning around the fence?
I did. There were, underneath the signs were warnings that said, warning, electrified fence. The Sheriff's Department showed up immediately, you know, confirmed all this.
Uh-huh.
You know, the idea was simple deterrent, right? It was getting very cumbersome to have to continue to replace signs every time I put one out.
So when your doorbell rang and it was the kid's father, geez, how did that go down?
So I was not home when he came to the front door. My 13-year-old daughter was here, Emily, and she opened the door, and he, somewhat angrily, I guess, started accusing her of shocking his son and so forth.
Hmm. Have you talked to him yet?
I have not.
Doesn't sound like
opposed to it. And I don't blame the guy for being angry. At the time, he had no idea what he was dealing with. For all he knew, I could have wired the thing directly to an AC outlet.
That's true.
And ran out live wires. So you know,
if it was your daughter stealing an Obama sign, you might have been just as upset.
You know, I guess.
Now I only know what I read in the paper here, Sean. So I don't know how much of this is true, but some neighbors are saying that where you put that sign is kind of a common area that you live in, on kind of a corner lot, and that might be perceived as community property and not your property. Is there any truth to that?
There is not. In fact, I dusted off the survey from when we bought the house just to make sure, and the entire lot is mine. The Homeowners Association does have a site easement which allows the Homeowners Association to access a small portion of the land for the purpose of maintaining landscaping and so forth. It's still considered my property, and folks that are not representing the homeowners for the purpose of landscaping are trespassing. But furthermore, the easement ends at 10 feet from the road, and my signs were beyond that anyway, so that's a completely irrelevant point nonetheless.
Sean, while I may be of a different mind, I very much respect your use of a John McCain, Sarah Palin sign in your front yard. He's a great American who served his country and has had a fine political career. But yeah. He also is a man who spent 5 years as a prisoner of war and was tortured. Do you think John McCain would approve of shocking someone?
I'm John McCain, and I approve of
it. Doesn't that seem a tad inappropriate?
Sir, the level of shock administered by one of these is slightly higher than that of, if you shuffled your feet in a dry room on a carpet and shocked your sister.
That's what they said at the Hanoi Hilton.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So now I assume that the law enforcement people just want you all to go away. Nobody's filed any charges, right?
Correct. Sheriff's deputy showed up, basically said, what you're doing isn't illegal, but it's likely to create more headache than it's worth, so you might want to turn it off.
How about a sprinkler? How about a nice motion-activated sprinkler, a little water torture for these kids?
Well, I did take his advice, and I unplugged it, and less than 12 hours later, my signs walked away again.
Oh,
and I captured yet another angry person on my front lawn tearing my signs up.
And you have video surveillance?
I do.
Are you a war vet, too?
I am not.
Oh, okay. I can picture you in a little room, basically. Charlie's coming.
He's got a bush on his head, got his face all painted.
So this is annoying. Now, this is a fairly liberal area that we're, I got to tell you, we're in Obama country here.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's happened to anybody, just because if it's based on just your whole area not liking those candidates. Would you describe your neighborhood as being more liberal in that basically it's uncool for you to have that sign in your neighborhood?
Absolutely. In fact, what I've, I was telling my wife the other day, the reason this got such attention is not because of the fence or the camera. It's because the press actually found out that there's an actual conservative living in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Interesting.
The newsworthy part.
Now, you do know the election, it's not looking good at this point, right?
Correct.
Yeah. You're not one of those that's totally freaked out and thinks we're going to turn into Russia or anything, are you?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
I'm not a big supporter of redistribution of wealth. What Obama has planned for health care concerns me. One of my daughters has special needs, and I'm very concerned about the future of health care. But you know what? We'll survive.
Sean Terschak in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. If you could put that on one of them big church signs in front of your yard, maybe they'd stop stealing the signs, because you seem like a nice guy.
Perhaps.
Thanks.
Not quite as bad as, man, when I first read that story. It's like, oh, my God, electrified your sign, a 9-year-old kid gets electrocuted?
Well, yeah, I don't have any problem with it. Anybody here have a problem with it? Anybody in the audience have a problem with it?
If he'd been actually electrocuted,
I would have a problem with it,
Man hooks campaign sign up to 220 volts direct.
You know what we should do, though?
Waters lawn
first. We should get one of those pet... electric fences, and we should send Zach out to touch it and have him tell us. Because until we speak to someone who's actually felt it.
Dude, I've done it. I've touched it.
Yeah, but Zach would do it if we asked him.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
Zach, would you go touch an electric fence?
Zach would wrap himself up in it.
There was a job at the end of the day.
Would he again offer to do it in a diaper? And does that indicate he has some?
Zach
kind
is giving us
problem.
A thumbs up. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
If someone nearby the station has one of these pet fences, Zach will go with his cell phone, touch it, and then we'll decide whether it's too harsh for a 9-year-old.
You know, Melissa's dad was raising a fruit tree, and the squirrels kept coming to take the kiwis that he was growing in his backyard. It was very laborious, you know, and time-consuming. It took 3 years to have a male and female fruit tree planted side by side to grow to points where they could bear fruit. And these squirrels kept coming and stealing the kiwis. So the old boy electric fenced that fruit tree. And I one day reached up and tried to steal a kiwi and got zapped by this electric fence. And it's a real toe-tapper, that little shock. It's a noticeable little zing.
Now, there are different grades. Like, the ones we used to use to keep horses in, I think, is a little stronger than what this guy had in his yard. That one would give you a jolt.
1-800-252-1025. Are we missing anything, folks? The guy did nothing illegal. David in Seattle, go ahead.
Hi there. I think he should have turned the power up.
Yeah.
Maybe should have left it on. Maybe put a sign there that said, a bigger sign saying that they're powered by electricity and you're going to get shocked if you try to steal my sign.
Okay. Anyway, just for survey purposes, do I put an R or a D next to your name?
Turn it on and turn it up.
But do I put an R or a D next to your name?
Oh, a D. Yeah.
You're a Democrat who says turn the power up.
Yeah, but even if I was a Republican, I'd say turn the power up. I mean,
even if I had that problem, I would say. All right, thank you, David. Brian and Kirkland, you're next. Brian, hello. Yes, Brian.
Hey, guys. I was wondering, why didn't anybody bring up the fact that this is a 9-year-old child changing out this sign? Not just stealing the sign, but changing the sign.
Well, swapping it for an Obama sign, trespassing on his property, though.
Well, I understand that, but the kid was 9 years old. Is he that much into politics at 9 years old?
They said in the article that the kid did this on his own volition. He had just heard a lecture about Barack Obama, wanted to change the sign. And another thing that should be pointed out is...
Was it that half-hour commercial? Kid watched that half-hour commercial?
That was probably it. Yeah. This is like the entrance of a neighborhood, and you got the neighborhood sign, like, you know, Sheffield
Kid may
Greens.
Not have known he was trespassing.
It looks like a common area, and it also looks like the kind of place where if you live in that neighborhood and there's a sign for a candidate...
But Brian's big point is you put a dog fence somewhere where a 9-year-old kid could get it. My answer to that, Brian, is what if you had a dog?
Well, I do have a dog.
And you had that fence, and a 9-year-old wandered in from the neighborhood. What would make that any difference? What does politics even have to do with it?
Well, I understand that, but it was what he was doing. He wasn't there just going through the yard getting zapped by the fence. He was there actually...
He was committing early vandalism, and perhaps this will nip it in the bud.
Yes. Well, in my opinion, I would have turned the power up, too.
Wow. And can I put an R or a D next to your name?
A D.
D. Democrats for electrocution. Tom in Tacoma.
How you doing, Bob? I had one of those dog fences in my yard for years, and I put the controller inside my garage so that it wouldn't be out in the weather and get ruined. It was real close to the light switch, so if you weren't paying attention when you reached in to turn on the light, you'd get zapped real good. There was more than one person that got nailed with that. It was actually kind of funny.
And you agree this is a property rights issue, and there was
absolutely. I agree with your analysis. There'd be or your analogy that if you had the electric dog fence out there, and the kid, you know, walked in the yard and touched it, it wouldn't be any different.
Has nothing to do with politics. Thank you. I put an R or a D next to your name, even though it has nothing to do with politics.
Well, I've a reluctant R. I'm not
no, an unhappy R. This is a rough R year.
Yeah.
I got it.
Not unhappy. Just. You know, not as happy as I used to be.
Thank you, Tom. Donnie in Tacoma, hello.
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
All right, only a few seconds left, Donnie. Give me your bottom line.
I'm totally for the guy being able to protect his property.
Right.
I've been zapped by one of them things before. Yeah. Lots of voltage, no amperage, won't hurt you.
Thank you.
Right.
Kathy, last word. Go ahead.
Hey, no problem. I am a Republican, very proudly, and they should turn up the amperage. That kid should not be stealing.
Republicans for turning up the amperage.
Right. So what? The kid can never grow pubes. So what?
Well, he should not be stealing. I mean, that's the whole thing. You have a 9-year-old and is stealing anything.
Should we electrify all the things that 9-year-olds try to steal?
No, but a little fence, a little dog fence isn't going to hurt anything.
I've got to tell you about my Seahawk.
Yeah.
On Sunday, I will be at the game, and I have picked the Seahawk whose shirt I wanted to wear. Jersey, I know it's a jersey, because I don't have a uniform. I don't have an official. I mean, I have clothes that are blue and green, but that's probably not good enough, as I'll be down there in the front row right next to Big Low. And so I've got a jersey for Brandon Kutu, who is basically what I told Spike and Joe is I want to pick a guy on the team who's, you know, maybe he's low man on the totem pole now. Maybe he's got a shot of being really big someday, and I'm going to be the first person ever to have his jersey. Because down there in the front row, you might even get on TV. So, and maybe his folks are watching the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my son's shirt is on TV. Odds are not that good, I suppose. But.
Well, Brandon is a very accomplished player. He went to the University of Georgia, where in his entire career, he never missed an extra point. Never.
Never?
Perfect.
He's perfect. He's Denny Crane.
Perfect at the University of Georgia. Perfect. He is.
So there's a lot of reasons to really like this guy.
There's only a handful of men like him in the NFL. Second string kickers are unheard of.
Now, most teams don't have a second string kicker. What do they do if their kicker gets like a hangnail or something?
There will be someone on their roster that can kick in a pinch.
There's a lot of UPS drivers and stuff out there that are good kickers that'll quit in a second to come play in the NFL. There are other kickers. They're out there.
They're fish throwers.
They're selling insurance.
Who can also kick.
Exactly.
Only two NCAA kickers last year were even drafted. Only two. The Seahawks think so much of this guy. They invite him to summer training camp. He competed with Orlando Mario, a seasoned veteran.
Now, there's a chance he may call us this morning.
We contacted the Seahawks yesterday and requested an interview with Brandon. Julie Barber, who does.
Are we the only people on the planet ever to request?
Ever.
Well, you're not the first guy to wear his jersey, but you're the second. He's the first.
You'll
be the only.
So I'm picking a great unsung hero who had an amazing career in college, who is a second string kicker for the. Now, why is he? Of course, I'll ask him if we talk to him. Why is he taking this job when there's? You told me very little chance he'll actually take the field unless something happens.
He'll take the field eventually for this ball club. The Seahawks went and got a veteran. A free agent veteran. When they lost Josh Brown, they went and found Orlando Mare, who's a great kicker, by the way. Guy hasn't missed one all year.
So is Brandon like spiking his food with strychnine or what?
No, Brandon's being paid to watch football. This is the American dream. They haven't had to wash this guy's uniform yet. He's never stepped on the field.
Okay.
You will be closer to the action than Brandon Kutcher.
No, where will he be?
He'll be on the sideline, but further
I joked
than the
earlier.
Game
I said, will he be in the dugout?
Yes, he will.
Well, he might not be in the stadium.
No, they don't call it the dugout in football, do they? What do they call it?
A sideline. He'll be on the
bench.
Yeah, he'll be on the bench.
Yeah.
He won't be active.
He might be at home because he won't be an active player.
He's not an active player this summer?
Well, they always have to make a few inactive.
Oh, in order to stuff their roster with whoever's injured.
Yeah, they'll say, okay, this week you're inactive. You're still on the roster. Yeah,
but you do get to watch the game.
Yeah,
you could. But
I mean, you're there in the stadium in case.
I don't know if it's a requirement.
If you're inactive. And, you know, like, say some bad food gets some food poisoning happens, and all of a sudden they need you in the middle of the game, but you're inactive, they can't bring you
not
in?
Not eligible to play. You have to, like, maybe your third-string quarterback you'll make inactive on any given Sunday.
Oh. So there's no chance that I'm going to have, like, a Rudy moment when
like
he comes out there.
Like a Brandon Kutu game-winning field goal. No.
Not me picking the
So it's just for pure love of the game that he's there and I'm wearing his shirt.
But that may be a pro bowler for many years. He is a good kicker, and you'd be the first to ever own his jersey.
That would be cool.
Well, let me explain how this jersey came to be. Let me hand it to you.
Oh, you got the jersey?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, thank you. I do have the dough, by the way.
You better.
Oh, that's nice.
That's nice.
Well, this is the exact jersey that the players wear. This is
by the way, Kudu. Like Kotu is Kudu is one of my sponsored children in Africa. So it's like I'm sponsoring a young Seahawk.
A young Seahawk. Oh, will you correspond with him? Write him fan letters.
I will correspond with him.
Write him fan letters.
And send him, like, pens.
That's sweet. We officially, by NFL policy, shouldn't have that today.
How come?
Because that's an official NFL game jersey. That is the exact same thing the Seahawks wear on the field. That is an official.
But it looks to me, come on, I've been to the stadium. Everybody has these.
That's fine. And after 7 days, I could have one of those for you. There is an NFL policy that says you must purchase your jersey in advance, tell them what letter and name you want on your jersey.
Then they do a background check on you to make sure you're, you know,
come on.
Patriotic American.
Come on.
No, but they sanction what goes on an NFL jersey. For example, people have often bought jerseys.
So wait a minute, you're not going to get me tossed out violation of some jersey ordinance. I'm going to be the only sober guy in the game to get tossed out.
That jersey was made for you by Seattle Tackle Twill, Athletic Lettering Company, the people who make the Seahawk jerseys. That's who made that jersey.
Oh, so they knew what we're doing.
So there's,
they
just
like the idea.
Just like license plates, there's some words that you can't put on an NFL jersey.
For example,
jersey.
Many people wanted to get a Michael Vick jersey and put Dog Killer on the back. The NFL says no. The NFL won't let you put profanity or offensive things
on their license. If you walk in there with a Michael Vick, I don't want to say Dog Killer.
They'll bounce you.
They'll bounce you?
If you want to put a dirty word on the back of your jersey,
they'll
you
bounce
can't.
You. All right. Leslie in Seattle. Hello, Leslie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great, and you?
I'm fine. I'm excited because normally I watch the game from my living room, and this time my drummer for Spike and the Impalers, Jeff Cathan, couldn't make it because he's doing a charity event, Woodstick, and so I have his tickets, and he's on TV, you know, every other Sunday,
yeah.
And they're all dressed up down there, so I got to get my face painted, and I wanted to get a special jersey, and I got this guy Brandon Kotu.
Well, I think you'll find it will be, over time, a very special jersey. It is in his collegiate football playing alma mater's history. He made quite an impact at the University of Georgia, and he's already made an impact at the Seahawks. The
Leslie, based on your southern accent, did he ever impact on you? You know what I'm saying?
No.
Would you call yourself a soft target?
He did not impact on me. He is considerably younger than I am. And while I'm in the cougar age range, I don't have those proclivities. My husband wouldn't appreciate that.
Got it. Okay, Leslie. Thank you very much.
You sound like a fan.
But you're a fan of his.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm a fan of the Seahawks because of him. He actually got into a preseason game and went 5 for 5 in field goals.
I thought he was going to be the kicker.
Yeah, that's why Holmgren hung on to him.
So this is a pick to click. This is buying a penny stock that could be the next Microsoft.
It is indeed, and he's a really nice guy as well.
Well, he hasn't called us yet this morning. We gave him the hotline. We're hoping to have an exclusive interview with him.
Well, I think what happened was team physicians were on him when they requested an interview with him. When someone came to him from media relations and said, Brandon, they want to interview you. I think he fainted, and they had to get some smelling salts.
Right. So, Leslie, do you know him personally, though, or are you just a fan?
Brandon and his family. His elder brother works with my stepfather in the real estate business in Atlanta, and his father is a grocery store manager for the Kroger Company in Atlanta.
All right.
I used to work with him in my business. So, yeah,
a quality guy, you're saying.
Very quality guy, and I mean, I really do think he's going to be one of the elite kickers in the NFL to come, and I think that's why the Seahawks decided to have two kickers on staff. He either will be the place kicker of the future for the Seahawks, or they'll trade him to a team with a desperate need.
Wow. Hey, Leslie, you know his mom?
I don't know his mom so well.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, we should call his mom and tell her to watch TV on Sunday because I'm going to wear his shirt.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Right. If you actually make it on camera, and knowing you guys, you probably will, I'm sure would be thrilled to see his fan
following. It's my boy's jersey! My boy's got a fan!
Well, you know, here's the thing, though. If this guy is this good, which is what everybody's telling me, this is the best possible pick. Because now he's doing what you do. You call it paying your dues, right, Leslie?
Absolutely.
And yet at some point, he's going to be the star of the team, and he's going to win a game. Who knows? Maybe even the Super Bowl.
it could definitely happen, and I think that he's got the mental toughness as well as the physical ability to come in and really make.
All right. Is he a healthy guy? Is he a pretty clean liver? And when I say liver, I'm talking about that organ underneath the underneath the lungs.
He's a fairly clean liver. I mean, he's not you know, set for the priesthood or anything.
He is a Georgia Bulldog.
None of those priesthood guys really block very well or even kick. So, yeah. All right. Leslie, it's very nice to meet you, and we're waiting. Hopefully, Brandon will give us a call, but I understand how tough it is to get an interview with a hot player, which hopefully he has become.
He's probably asleep right now. You know how kids are.
Hey there, Georgie girl, swinging down the street so fancy free. Nobody you meet could ever see the loneliness there inside you. Hey there, Georgie girl.
The facts were these. He worked with George Martin in the 60s. He wrote Georgie Girl. And now he's one of the biggest bucks narrators out there. Harry Potter series, for example. To hear Jim Dale speak is truly a treat. As I mentioned, Grammy, Tony Awards, all sorts of things in this man's collection. Known the world over as the guy who narrates the Harry Potter books, and to U.S. TV viewers, you'll also recognize his voice from ABC's Pushing Daisies. Jim Dale, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. Hello.
Thank you, Bob, very much. Nice to be with you.
And you too, sir, and I wish I had your skills as an announcer.
Thank you so much. Nice compliment.
Yeah.
Always nice to start off with a nice compliment.
Well, now, you've been doing this a long time, and you've got a varied career. I want to go back to Georgie Girl, because it's a monstrous oldie and big hit, and could you tell us the story of coming up with that song? Was there a particular young lady who it was about?
Yes, it was the film Georgie Girl with Lynn Redgrave and James Mason, and Alan Bates was in it as well. And so they contacted Tom Springfield, who's Dusty Springfield's brother, and Tom wrote the music, then got in touch with me. He knew at that time I was also a pop singer and I was writing songs for other artists. So he phoned me up and asked if I'd like to go along and see the film with regard to putting my my lyrics to the song. And then when we saw the film, he said, we need to write a song for the beginning of the film to show what she's doing on screen, for the end of the film to show what she's doing on screen, and then we need to write a commercial version so that we could have the Seekers recorded and just sell it as a pop song. So there were three different versions of Georgie Girl, and the one that you played now was the one that was finally released as a single, and I think it sold about 7 million in the first year.
Yeah.
That was wonderful. And I'm still, would you believe it, still getting royalties from 1966.
Wow. So you must have actually had a good lawyer back then, which a lot of people
did. I had a wonderful lawyer. He's in the Bahamas at the moment.
Yes, I'll bet. Boy, listening to you speak, Jim, obviously that's your huge talent, but I still want to know a little more musically, because you worked with George Martin in the 60s, and to all of us who absolutely revere the Beatles, those of us who know how much George Martin contributed to the Beatles know what an amazing talent he was. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Yes. George joined Parlophone as a young man aged 27, and he had no artists at all, so he phoned Cleo Lane, the jazz singer, the wonderful jazz singer, and asked Cleo if he could represent her in the jazz field. And then he was looking around to represent a pop singer, and I was on the scene at that time, doing the best I can. I was on the scene by accident. I became a pop singer by accident, but that's another story. So George phoned me one day, and he said, instead of instead of singing all these American songs on this rock and roll show on television, why don't you let me record with you? You can write your own material, and you can sing your own songs, make a few bob out of it. So I signed up with George Martin. I was his very, very first artist, and I stayed with George for at least a year and a half, and he was wonderful. He got a few of my songs in the Hit Parade, and it was great, and I was on television two or three times a week.
And now, did he do stuff with you like the Beatles? I mean, did he say, here's your French horn players coming in?
No, George didn't at that time. I think it was the Beatles who really gave George that in inspiration to bring various... I was just an ordinary common or garden pop singer. There wasn't a lot you could do with my voice. It was more like asthma put to music. There wasn't a lot going for it.
Wow.
And I realized that. So after 2 years, I said, you know, George, I love it, but I'd really like to go back to comedy. I love comedy more than pop singing. I love making people laugh. So George and I shook hands. We're still dear friends. And then I went on to another completely different career than pop singing.
World famous narrator you are.
Well, that's only in the last 8 years.
Yeah, Jim Dale, you could read the phone book to me, and it would be a fascinating story.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Now, tell us a little about the Shoebird, because this is going to be, you're going to narrate, but you're going to be backed by an entire symphony orchestra.
Well, what can I say about the Shoebird? There's another piece of music for children called Peter and the Wolf. It's now 70 years old, and there should be something as good as that, maybe even better, hopefully, out there. And suddenly, I was contacted by the Seattle Symphony to ask whether I'd be interested in putting my voice to some tracks they had laid down called The Shoebird, written by Samuel Jones. And I listened to it, and I listened to the narrator narrating the story, and I realized that this was such a terrific challenge because the narrator has to do the voices of 14 different speaking birds, from the Dowager Duchess Goose to the parrot, etc. That was the challenge. It was like another Harry Potter book put to music, as it were.
Wow.
So that made me realize I needed to do this just for my own satisfaction. And this is the first time I've ever listened to an audiobook. I've never heard an audiobook that I've made of Harry Potter, because I'm too critical. I would want to do it again.
You can't hear your own audiobook.
I would never dream of listening.
That'd be embarrassing, too, if you pulled up at a stoplight and someone pulled up next to you and went, hey, you're Jim Dale. Oh, you listened to yourself,
no,
huh?
No, that's it. No, it's terrible.
Yeah.
See, when you're recording an audiobook, you don't stop. You just keep going till you get to the end of the page. Then you have to stop to turn the page because it makes a noise. So there's no take 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 as there are in films. Just one take. And, of course, if you listen to the book, you're bound to say, oh, if I'd have been given an opportunity of doing another take, I could have done something better.
Wait a minute. Now, if you flub a word, you just repeat it and they edit it? Is that how that works?
Yes, well, usually with me, they've learned their lesson. When I want to do something again, I just swear. They have to stop the tape. And then
like the War of the Worlds guy. What's his name? Orson Welles? Yeah.
So are there some... at how much swearing is going on in the recording studios for Harry Potter. J.K. Rowling would be underneath the seat.
Jim, you mentioned that you did at least 18 different bird voices, you said, for the Shoebird.
14 different bird
voices. Is it true that you hold the Guinness Book of World Records record because in one of the books for Harry Potter, you did 146 different character voices?
I think it was 134.
134, okay.
Yes, they got in touch with me, and they said, we heard you've done a tremendous amount of voices. And I said, yes. And they said, well, would you like a Guinness World Record? I said, my grandchildren would love it. And they love it more than the Tony Award, the Academy Award nomination. It's the Guinness World Book of Records. That's what they can boast about at school, and every one of their friends knows about it. There's also another Guinness World Record. It appears that I occupied the first 6 places in the top 10 audiobooks in America. They got in touch with me because of that and offered me another world.
Yeah,
right, Jim.
1 through 6 of the top 10 were you.
Jim?
Yeah.
Which voice are we hearing now?
Oh, you're hearing Jim.
This is you.
This is just me.
Is there a Larry the Cable Guy version of Jim?
No, there isn't.
What you don't do.
Get her done.
Get her done.
But you do an amazing young schoolgirl. I mean, is that one of the reasons you don't listen back to the Harry Potter? I mean, you're doing...
I wouldn't put it that way.
It would be so embarrassing to listen to the voices. It's very difficult. Let me explain very quickly how you have to record an audiobook, especially Harry Potter. We have to get the audio tapes on the shelves the same day that the book is released. So I am sent the script after the book has been published, as it were. It's just waiting to go on the shelves, and I've got about 6 weeks now to record the book. They give it to me on Saturday morning. On Monday morning, I'm in the studio recording it. Now, I can't read more than 100 pages a night and invent the voices for those 100 pages. So I go into the studio on Monday morning not knowing what the story is going to be about other than the first 100 pages. That night, after I finished recording as many pages as I could, I come back home and I listen and read to another, read another 100 pages and invent those voices. And then I go back in the studio on Wednesday to do that. So it's very, very quick. I don't have time to select voices. I just have to grab the first voice that comes to mind in my head.
A lot of actors on our television are from Britain or Australia, and they can talk American. You wouldn't even know they were from Britain or Australia. Do you have an American accent?
You'll notice, when you listen to any of my audiobooks, they're all written by British authors. I can't do an American accent for the life of me, but I can do every accent from England.
Well, what if
I just don't know what it is. I just don't have the way you do it.
What if Hogwarts has an American exchange student?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, but it'll just be British. It'll be, you know what? I get that because, Jim, you're about drama. You're not a mimic like the impressionists.
Oh, no, I'm not an impressionist. Yeah. What I do is I take a voice and I use that as a template. In other words, that's square one. Yeah. And from like John Houseman, who was a friend of mine, bless his heart, and John used to talk like this, emphasizing every word in the sentence that was important. And, of course, I used that voice as a sort of square one for Dumbledore.
Wow.
You know, phenomenal.
So you can relate those voices. Maggie Smith's The Pride of Miss Jean Brodie, that I used her voice, as it were, as a stepping stone towards Professor McGonagall.
Now, I don't know if this will embarrass you or not, but Eric has some audio. Is this some of his various voices?
Well, this is actually of the Shoebird.
All right, let's listen to a little bit of this.
Madame Dodo approached the group and whispered, "Is this the mysterious convocation of the birds? It's turned into a shoe party, I think," said Minerva. "But yes, this is it," Arturo said with a bow. "Madam Dodo, I'm sure I speak for every bird here when I say it's a great honor to welcome you to the shoe store. But how did you get here? We thought you were extinct."
Ah, amazing, Jim.
Jim, you're phenomenal.
Ah, thank you.
Jim, before you go, could I ask you a favor?
Excuse me, yeah.
Can I ask you a favor?
Yeah.
I mean, I have no right to ask this. And feel free to say no. Would you say, "You're listening to The Bob Rivers Show on KZOK"?
"You're listening to The Bob Rivers Show on what?"
KZOK.
KZOK. Okay.
Actually, I wanted you to do it as Jim. But perhaps I'd have to call your attorney.
They warned me about you, too.
Yeah.
Well, he warned me about you before I came on the air.
Can we try one more, please? All right.
Yes.
I'll stay out of your way. Here we go.
Oh, you want me to do it again?
Yes, you're listening to the...
I'm sorry, something's happening in the studio. I've just fallen off the chair. I'm on the floor. The wire from the telephone is wrapped around my neck. Just a minute. I can't even see what I'm doing. Oh, God. I'm all right. It's just a slight compound fracture. Just a moment. Have we gone off?
No, we're here.
We're still here.
Yeah.
Where is it?
He's serious.
You're listening to the Bob Rivers Show on KZOK.
You're listening to the Bob Rivers Show on KZOK. This is Jim Dale, or Professor McGonagall, or Dobby, saying good morning, sir. Good morning.
All right. Where do I send the check?
Where do you... I'm sorry. You devil. Yes, they say, be prepared to ad-lib with this mob.
Oh, they did say that to you?
Oh, they warned me about it. There's a big sign in this studio that says, watch out.
Jim, we can't wait to see you. Jim, thank you.
Thank you.